Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Women Who Inspire. My guest today is Cynthia Carell. And Cynthia was unfortunately, she came down with the coronavirus, and she's here to explain a little bit of, you know, the symptoms and how she felt, and just to enlighten people. So, Cynthia, how are you now?
I am doing much better. This week was really a turnaround week for me.
Great.
No, the difference between how I felt this time last week and how I feel today is like night and day. So I think I've finally turned the corner, which is good. It's been a long time.
So from your estimation, how did you contract this disease?
Who I got it from, I don't know, although I have my suspicions about this lady in the bagel store. She was not social distancing, and I was trying to, and the fact that I was standing 10 feet away while she was tra-la-la, she went out of her way to, like, brush past me as she left, which I thought was pretty obnoxious. So it might have been her. I really don't know, but I remember thinking at the time, if I get this, it's her fault. And that was before I had a mask. That encounter
mm-hmm.
happened, which was why I was trying to social distance. But I came down with it. It was really funny. It was like March 27th, which I think was Thursday or Friday. And mm-hmm. In addition to having a law practice, I coach a high school rugby team. And we've been trying to do virtual practice to keep them in shape while school is canceled and obviously sports are canceled. So I had mm-hmm. just set them a task of a 5-mile run. And it was 4:00 in the afternoon. I was finished with my work for the day. I had my sneakers on. I was going to go walk 5 miles because I tried to do what I asked them to do as a sign of solidarity and respect. And I walked right past the front door, which is normally how I would leave the house to go walk the 5 miles, made a U-turn, went to my bed, and got into bed, sneakers and all, and went to sleep.
Wow.
And I slept for 27 of the next 29 hours, which
really
put me at a real dehydration deficit because, you know, when you're sleeping 27 hours almost straight, you don't drink a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was home sick and refusing to go to the hospital because I kept saying, no, I'll get over it. And we should save that bed for somebody who really needs it. And a friend of mine who's a doctor sent me a message on Facebook, and she said, just pay really close attention around day 10 or 11. A lot of people suddenly take a turn for the worse. And another friend of mine who's a nurse, he seconded it in the Facebook thread. And son of a gun, on the 10th, I wake up, and my husband goes, your lips are blue. You're going to the hospital. I don't care what you say. Your lips are blue. And I had a very high fever. I think it was 102. So he called my doctor. He called my insurance company. He called the hospital. So everybody was on the same page. But I was so weak on that day, and I remember this very well. By the time we got to the emergency room, well, first of all, I couldn't walk. He had to carry me to the car. Then took three people to get me out of the car and into the. But when I was in the emergency room, you know, like when you're lying in bed and you get like a little cramp and you roll over to the other side, I was too weak to roll over.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, fortunately, I live near Glen Cove Hospital, which is one of the best emergency departments on the planet. By virtue of all our sports and stuff, we're frequent flyers at that emergency room.
And this is in New York.
It's Glen Cove is on the north shore of Long Island. It's the little city in the heart of the Gold Coast, as they like to call it. But it's a great ER. Unlike a lot of places, you get a room. It's a separate room. So what they did was they split the ER in half. One half was for regular, you know, people in car accidents and heart attacks and stuff, and one half was for people presenting with COVID, which was genius. And since you're in your own room, you're isolated right off the bat. They did the chest X-ray in your room in the ER. They brought a portable X-ray. And the X-ray technician came back afterwards with the X-ray and she said, "See this? This is the classic broken glass." She goes, "They haven't tested you yet, but I'm telling you now, you got COVID."
Wow.
Yeah, and she's like, but she did not think I would make it through the weekend. And I was like, really? She goes, "You have 17 separate pneumonias. I don't know how you have any oxygen in your body." So I'm like, okay, good to know.
You had what?
I had 17 separate pneumonias.
Really?
Yeah, there were 17 places where there was an obstruction and fluid was building up behind it.
And this is all because of the coronavirus.
Yeah. But
okay.
The biggest problem for me, during the 2 weeks I was home and when I first got to the hospital, I really wasn't that upset about what was going on with my lungs. That didn't bother me that much. What killed me was my digestive system. I spent all mm-hmm. my time vomiting, having really strange diarrhea, really strange urine, and I wasn't eating anything, and I was still vomiting all the time. There was nothing in my system. I still don't understand how I could have diarrhea. I had not eaten for 8 days.
Wow.
And I even said to the doctor, "What am I producing? Is it that my body is cannibalizing itself? Like, how is there anything at all in my digestive tract? I haven't eaten."
Mm-hmm.
So, don't know. And my lungs are healing faster than my digestive tract, which is interesting. But I had the pneumonia. I had something horrible going on with my digestion and my urinary tract. For 3 days, 2.5 days, I couldn't remember how to use my cell phone. I could answer it, but I couldn't make outgoing calls. And it was really funny because I had gone on Facebook on my cell phone because they gave me oxygen and I felt like a million times. I'm now in a regular room in a COVID ward and they're giving me oxygen and I feel terrific. I can roll over in bed now. I can walk again.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to post on Facebook that oxygen made me feel so much better and so much stronger. And evidently, no matter what I thought I was doing with my thumbs, the word strong and the word oxygen got in there, but my sisters tell me, "You're posting gibberish on Facebook. Stop doing that." Right after that, I kept the Facebook app open because right after I posted the gibberish, I forgot how to use my phone. So I left the Facebook open so I could scroll and read it to amuse myself, but I couldn't figure out how to make an outgoing call. I couldn't figure out how to get into any other app. I have a lot of social media on my phone. Couldn't figure out how to do any of that. So when one of my sisters called me, thank God I still knew how to answer, I said, "Please tell everybody I can't call out for a while because I have forgotten how to use my phone," which is sort of crazy. I also had the first day that I couldn't use my phone, I couldn't use the TV remote either.
Mm-hmm.
Which was crazy. So every time a nurse came in, I would go, "Could you explain the TV remote to me?" And they're looking at me like, "What are you, nuts? You know, like, what is wrong with you, lady?" So that was kind of weird. The first couple of days when I was home sick, when I was still home before I went to the hospital, I had that thing where you lost taste and smell. That lasted like 2 days. Like, a lot of things, the neurological things, they only last like 2 days. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
After I got home, I was home maybe 3 weeks, I suddenly got super smell. So all of a sudden, I'm sitting in the den with a blanket on my lap, and suddenly I really noticed the smell of the detergent or fabric softener or whatever it was. I had been using this blanket for days. Never noticed it before. But suddenly it was overwhelming, and I, like, threw the blanket across the room. And for the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, 5 days, and it was only bad smells. I didn't really notice any smells that I liked. But everything was, like, just a really pronounced smell. It was worse than when you get super smell when you're pregnant. It was worse than that. So that was weird.
What were the dates? When did you get sick?
I got sick March 27th. I went into the hospital. Hang on, I wrote it down somewhere. Because all the days kind of, I think this is true for everybody who's in, you know, quarantine, all your days kind of blend together. I went into the hospital. I can't read my own handwriting. Yeah, the 27th I went in. 27th I got sick. And when did I go in? I thought I wrote it down. I think I went into the hospital on the... It was after Passover, that much I know. So I think it was probably the 16th. It was definitely a Thursday.
Okay.
And it came out a week later.
Now, the reason I'm asking you this is I know you know the Cuomos, and I'm sure you know Chris. And Chris
seen Chris Cuomo since he was 10 years old.
But he had a really bad case of it where, you know, just watching him on TV, he had trouble talking because I guess his lungs were so compromised. So did you get sick around the same time frame that he did?
I don't know because I wasn't paying attention. I was sleeping and having chills.
And having what?
Sleeping and having chills.
Oh, okay. So you were in the hospital. Tell us about your hospital experience.
Well, what they did was two things about Glen Cove. It has a dedicated infectious disease floor that was created, I think it was after Ebola. It was part of when Obama did his post-pandemic thing and created the handbook and all that. Every region was required to have an infectious disease facility. So the one for Long Island is Glen Cove Hospital. And they dedicated an entire floor. Normally this floor is empty. But that floor was set up, so not only did it have patient rooms, it had a dormitory for the healthcare workers and a separate kitchen facility so that if it was something like super duper totally terrible mad cow Ebola-ish, that they could quarantine everybody and nothing, no germs could come out. It has a negative airflow system and all that stuff. I wasn't there. I was in a regular what must have been a pulmonary ward because it had oxygen that comes out of the wall, you know, that hooks up to the wall. So that made that a very valuable bed because otherwise you'd have to have oxygen tanks. You know, if you put somebody in an orthopedic room, you'd have to bring in oxygen tanks and monitor them to make sure they don't run out and all that stuff. So I must have been in a pulmonary ward because I had oxygen in the wall. And it was a big room. It must have been originally a room for two beds, but it had only the one. And I had a lavatory, no shower, just a toilet and a sink in the room. And every single person that came in, they would be wearing scrubs, the N95 mask, a surgical mask over the N95 mask to keep it clean, blue disposable gown over their regular stuff. And then when they would enter the room, and I found this out actually when I was discharged, outside each room was a chair with boxes of PPE. So they would enter the room carrying a yellow disposable gown. The gloves were in the room. They would put on the gloves. By the third day, they were also wearing those clear plastic face shield things. Mm-hmm. So they had on, you know, many layers of clothes. And then when they would leave, even if somebody was going to say, I'll be right back, I'm going to go get, you know, like fill up your water pitcher, they would have to take mm-hmm. off all the yellow PPE, put it in the garbage can was right over the door, go fill up the water pitcher, come back, get dressed, just to fill up a water pitcher. It was crazy.
Wow.
So they would go through an incredible amount of these yellow disposable gowns and the disposable masks and the disposable gloves.
Mm-hmm.
The cleaning staff, aside from the fact that I'd be terrified if I were them, and they would come in, like, in moon suits to empty the garbage can that had all this PPE in it, the normal mopping of your floor and all, none of that happened. The normal changing of your sheets, none of that happened. Because nobody wanted to come that far into the room.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the ladies who brought up dinner, because by the time I could walk around, did want to walk around as much as I could and, like, get stronger, mm-hmm. Would come in and put the dinner on a chair by the door and leave, and then I would go get my dinner. But most of the catering people actually brought it and put it on that little table that goes over your bed. But people who didn't have to come into the room too far tried not to. It was a real concerted effort to not come in the room, which I totally get. But I did have a lot of people coming in my room. I had the pulmonary guy. I had a pulmonary person 5 or 6 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they gave me hydrochloro, I can't pronounce that word, the stuff that Trump is touting. I had that for 5 days, but they would come in the morning and draw blood to make sure that my heart, liver, and I think kidneys were not being damaged by it. So they would check my
mm-hmm.
enzymes every morning, and if my enzymes were fine, then in the afternoon they would give it to me. It didn't do anything. It was no difference from it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of blood sticks. I had an IV.
So you were in the hospital for how long?
A week.
They wanted
to send me after 5 days. They wanted to send me to either the ship or to the Javits Center, but I didn't consent to it. The Javits Center,
mm-hmm.
there was no way to charge your phone, and there was one central number for your family to call in. And if they
mm-hmm.
lost you in those 2,000 beds, there would be no way for your family to find you. It was insane.
Mm.
But the whole notion
mm-hmm.
that you're, and I was like, so there's no way for me to call out. There's limited ability for your family to call in. And as far as I know, there's no kitchen in the Javits Center, so I don't even know how they feed people. So I was like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to wait till I'm strong enough to walk, and then I'll go home, which is what we did.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you were in the hospital for how long?
A week.
And then when you got home, was there still a process of,
well, I still
know,
had an active
had
infection when they discharged me, and I still had pneumonia. I just didn't need oxygen support anymore. The whole thing was once I didn't need the oxygen coming out of the wall, the room I was in was very valuable real estate, and they wanted it empty for the next person coming in who needed oxygen. And I totally got that.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, from looking around, I don't know how many other people that you saw that was stricken with this.
What I didn't see any of them.
Oh, okay.
I was in total isolation, but for the people coming in to put medicine in me or drop off dinner or whatever.
Okay.
The door didn't have a window, so I didn't see what was going on in the hallway unless somebody opened the door.
Mm-hmm. Did you have TV?
Yeah, I had TV. I had my phone. And once I remembered how to use it again, that gave me back, you know, social media.
Okay.
And I got a lot of FaceTime phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
So I was also asleep a lot. I was sleeping 16, 18 hours a day.
Wow.
Pneumonia does that. I mean, I've had pneumonia before. Pneumonia, basically, you just sleep all the time until you can breathe again.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I was bored. I didn't get bored till I got home.
Did they give you a choice of whether or not to go on a ventilator?
Actually, I have an order to not intubate me.
Okay.
So we did. It was sort of interesting, the logistics of it, because normally somebody comes and witnesses it and stuff from the patient advocate's office, and she calls me. She goes, "I've never had this situation before where I can't come and witness it. And so what we're going to do is you and the doctor are going to sign it. He's going to bring it downstairs, and then I'm going to call you back." And I'm like, "Okay, I will acknowledge my signature to you." People who get intubated and have a ventilator, they have to put you essentially into a drug-induced coma so that you won't try to rip it out.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? Not doing that. If they need to force air into you, they can do that with a CPAP machine. And the CPAP just has that regular triangle-faced cone that goes over your face.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I was like, I don't mind that. That, you know, you can CPAP me from here to Christmas, but I don't want feeding tubes. I don't want ventilators. I don't want to be a science experiment. And my reading on the topic is people that they put on a CPAP seem to do better than people that they intubate, because when they intubate you, that tube, you know, that's scraping up your tube, you know, your trachea and all. So
mm-hmm.
It's doing damage of its own. And as it was, after I got home, about 2 weeks, 3 weeks after I got home, I coughed up two pieces of lung tissue. So, and that's without being intubated. Can you imagine?
Wow.
So, the funny thing is, I had had this constant pain and this feeling like there's an elephant sitting on your chest right below my sternum, you know, right where your bronchial
mm-hmm.
tubes break off, and wouldn't go away. And when I would breathe, it wasn't, it would like tickle. And I think it must have been these two little pieces of bronchial tube lining were like loose skin flapping as I breathed. Because as soon as I coughed them up, that feeling went away. And it felt sore, like as if you pulled a scab off a boo-boo. And it's getting better, like it's less sore every day. But I think that weird tickling feeling must have been them flapping.
Mm. So do you feel that you have is your energy level close to 100% as it normally would be?
I don't have any
now.
Meaningful stamina. To go coach my rugby team would be 2 hours of standing on a, you know, a grass field, doing demonstrations, stuff like that, and then another hour and a half in the weight room. I don't think I can stand for those 2 hours. I don't think I could do a 5-mile walk, which, as I said, the day I got sick, I was planning to do and was more than capable of doing. I don't think I have that kind of stamina back, and my strength I've lost a lot of muscle tone because I've been basically laying around for 2 months.
Right.
So that's not there, but I'm obviously, like you and I talked on the phone a couple weeks ago, I am obviously much more animated. I feel like my brain is once again firing on most of its cylinders, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, as I said, this week has been a real turnaround week for me. Last week got the COVID rash, the one all the little kids get, which was murder. But it has stopped making any new rash. So I just have a lot of little boo-boos where I scratched it and it bled. And those are starting
mm-hmm.
to heal. And once they are healed, I will be almost myself again.
That's really, really terrific. So
yes.
We have just a few minutes left. Has COVID changed your perspective in any way?
I miss my family. And, I mean, we talk on the phone every day.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a grandchild 2 months ago that I have yet to meet.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Mm.
Fortunately, mm-hmm. her mother and her mother's mother are very, very good. There are pictures every day. There's been FaceTime. We had FaceTime, and she recognizes my voice, I think. Or maybe she just likes the phone. I don't know. I keep making this joke that, she's going to be walking before I meet her, the way things are going.
I don't think it'll be that long, do you?
I don't know. I mean, I feel this week, like, actually the last 2 days, I feel like I'm not sick anymore. I don't feel
mm-hmm.
sick. I feel like I'm just healing the various wounds that being sick made.
Right.
So now I don't feel like I have germs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really the last 48 hours. It's really amazing how different I feel. But so I think I'm just injured now rather than ill.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to go endanger a baby.
Right. So, this is, pardon my pun, but this is a life changer for everybody. It's a life changer for everybody. It's a life changer for society. And,
yep.
you know, everybody talks about the new normal, but nobody knows what the new normal is going to be. Do you agree?
I consider myself particularly lucky because I live in the suburbs.
Okay.
So I have a backyard.
Uh-huh.
I don't need, like, my daughter lives in Brooklyn. She has a beautiful loft in Brooklyn. And she got a puppy, so she wouldn't be lonely during being quarantined by herself, which was very smart.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, every time she walks that puppy, even though she's got the mask and the gloves and all that, she goes, there's always somebody who comes within a foot of her. You know, and she's like, as hard as I try to avoid these people, there's always somebody almost brushing up against me. She can't really, like for me, I go to the backyard, I got the backyard all to myself. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I can be outside. I planted 2 tomato plants yesterday in flower pots. I have flowers to look at and birds outside my window and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that bad here.
Okay.
I think if I lived in Elmhurst in an overcrowded apartment where every time I got in the elevator, there were going to be other people in the elevator, and every time I walked down the street, there were going to be people brushing against me,
mm-hmm.
that would be very scary.
Right.
I'm a lucky one.
Well, on that note, we have got to close. So you've been listening to Cynthia Carell, who is a lawyer on Long Island. And if anybody needs any help as far as, you know, that's in need of a lawyer, give them your
I help startup businesses. I counsel startup businesses and how to become a business and set up their standard contracts and stuff. I do contract litigation, and I do civil rights cases. I have several federal civil rights cases. And I have a website, Korrill, K-O-U-R-I-L, lawoffice.com. And that's got all my contact info.
Okay. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you.
So I'm Cynthia Pula. This is Women Who Inspire. And if you like this show, like us on Facebook, Women Who Inspire, and on Twitter, Women Inspire 21. Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you, Cynthia, for telling us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the plug.
Thank you. Have a great day. Stay well, everybody.
Yes. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Wash your hands.